You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. This is The Comedian's Comedian, and today it's a blast from the past for me, perhaps a blast from the future for you if you are as yet unfamiliar with Finnish comic Tommy Valmis. He is absolutely brilliant, and this was such a joy, and you can probably hear the sunshine spreading across my face as I just reflect on how lovely it is to reconnect with someone who you've not seen for so long and with whom you shared such an important time. Me and Tommy were open mic acts together many years ago, like 16, 17, 18 years ago, on the London comedy scene, and he has gone on to wonderful things. He's done over 2,000 gigs in 8 countries, appearing on television in England, Belgium and Finland. He writes for the top news satires in Finland, and his latest show tackles the big topics of religion, politics, racism and homophobia. He also has a wonderful podcast, which is called Queer and Dumb, and this is their podcast description. Trans man Jamie McDonald answers questions from dumb straight man Tommy Valmis. So, loads to talk about here. In the first half of this episode, we'll discuss the journey from graduating business school to launching into comedy. We're going to get into Tommy's analytical and research-focused approach to stand-up and to everything else. And we're going to talk about what it's like performing in Finland with a substantially smaller stand-up circuit. Remember, if you join the Insiders Club on Patreon at patreon.com/comcompod, you can watch the full episode and get access to over 16 minutes of bonus features with Tommy, including the cultural influence on Finland from the US and UK scenes, and if viral crowdwork clips have yet to hit their shores. Plus, Magic the Gathering, for those that care. And I can't remember, was this off mic or was it on the show? We talk about how Tommy is in the background of an episode of South Park. If that doesn't crop up in the show, tweet at me, at ComComPod, what's this South Park thing, you bastard, and I'll post about it. So with that in mind, here is Tommy Wallaby. Hello, old friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Stu? I've missed you.
I've missed you. It's really good to see you. It is such an extraordinary blast from the past to suddenly be back in touch with you. When we knew each other on the London open mic circuit in what years? You were in London for 3 years, I think.
I was in London from 2005 to 2008, and I met you almost immediately because I went to Edinburgh. Did you know there's a festival in August?
I've heard of this festival. It sounds good. How did you find it?
So we were doing the completely random open mics, and we were at the same open mic where this kind of a scammy guy was doing an hour and a half of a two-hour show. And then we both got like 10 minutes.
Oh my God, I remember the guy. I believe he got busted for tax evasion. So all's well that ends well. Let's not name him.
I would never have guessed. But yeah, I met you there and we were wondering, like, is this typical of the comedy scene that the host does an hour and a half and then we both do 10?
Yes.
We were sort of, we had just started. I don't know when you started, like 2004 or 5 or...
Something like that. I think 4, yeah. And we haven't laid eyes on each other since you left the UK. And in those days, No one really had a website. We used to put our CVs on a site called comedycv.co.uk, which would action as a sort of, it would function as a kind of multiple website for people that were told they needed a website to send information to bookers. So my point is that we didn't stay in touch because it wasn't common to stay in touch those days because the internet was so new.
It was internet 0.0. at that
point. And I, just to fill the listener in, I have referred to your jokes on several occasions, I would say, over the 12 years of my podcast.
Did you get smacked?
the one that I most frequently brutalize, I spoke to Joe Wilkinson on the Chatterbix podcast. I don't know if you're aware of that podcast. Joe is now, you know, very, very successful as a comic and a really interesting comic presence. And he has a podcast with another brilliant comic called David Earl called Chatterbix. I guested on it and we waxed lyrical about the old days. And we were both, he'll be thrilled that you're on this. He listens to every episode of The Comedian's Comedian.
Oh, cool.
And he'll be thrilled that you're on this. The one I think that I brutalized, and I believe I did an impression of you. Would you like to hear it? This is me doing an impression of one of your jokes.
I would love to hear the worst Finnish impression on the Northern Hemisphere. I would love to hear it.
I believe you used to say, my uncle is living the dream. Yeah. He's in a coma.
Perfect. 10 out of 10. No notes.
I remember you dressed in black because you, I think it was because you liked Bill Hicks, but it may have been for similar reasons to Bill Hicks dressing in black.
I dressed in black because I grew up overweight.
Oh.
So, and that makes you look slimmer. And then when I was in London, for that time I was not, but then later on I regressed to my old habits. But that was the reason I dressed in black.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I still have the identity of an overweight
yes.
person.
You look like a kind of an oddball. Is that fair?
Yes. I can tell you a bit of the background.
Tell me a bit. I don't know where to start with this. I'm overjoyed to see you. You're so welcome on the podcast. And I want to talk to you about your comedy, your podcast, where you're at now, all of that stuff. But let's just luxuriate in some reminiscence for a bit.
Okay. The feedback I got back then was that I'm sort of like distant and weird and foreign. So I'm not that much that anymore because I have learned human speech.
Yeah.
I grew up when I was about 35 and I was like, people don't talk like my uncle is living the dream.
Yes. Well, I think you were leaning into your foreignness, right? You were
yes,
and also that, also
I'm an oddball in Finland as well.
Are you?
Yes.
In what are your oddball characteristics? What are your traits that are different to the Finnish mainstream?
The typical ones, like overly analytical and not that good at small talk. So
okay.
I'll be the guy who's at a party and people are having fun and they're talking about all kinds of stuff like sports and whatever. And then I'll just walk in there and interrupt them by talking about computers.
Yes.
So that kind of guy.
Okay.
But I did lean into the Finnishness when I was over there because I figured it's like a USP, unique selling point.
100%. And you also, because you were doing oddball one-liners, like unusual one-liners, and the ones I remember are things like, I saw a homeless person and I gave him one penny because I figured it's the least I can do. that kind of thing. And you would lean into the kind of the challenge of being a one-liner comic, which I am not, but I have nothing but respect for people who bother writing proper jokes and delivering them. But it's almost like the slow measuring out of the words of the joke allow the audience to catch up at exactly the right time. And that made sense to you as a kind of comic persona.
And you don't need as much material if you talk slower.
Which is only fair, given how much material a one-liner comic needs.
Yes.
I think that's reasonable. So what brought you, tell us what brought you to London and where you were in your life?
I started doing stand-up comedy in 2004 as a lark. I had just graduated from business school and I figured I don't know what to do. The reason I went to business school is that it's not a specific education. It's not like now you're a heart surgeon, so you do heart surgery. It's just you do business. So after that, I didn't know what to do. So I tried all kinds of things. And one of them was stand-up because people had told me a lot of times in my life that I'm funny. And it was always the situation where I didn't try to be. Okay. It was the typical situations, like at a high school, you have to do a recital or whatever. And then people just start laughing at me because of my awkward and stilted persona. So there's it doesn't fix with the serious material. I remember at a geography class, I was talking about like world hunger and famine. And people started laughing so much that the teacher was super angry at me. Like he thought I was doing it on purpose.
Oh,
when
no.
I was like, in Africa, a lot of people do not have that much. And people just start laughing, and that's not appropriate.
No, of course. And when you say your persona, do you mean your personality? You mean you just naturally
my
spoke
personality,
like that?
Yeah. Just my actual personality, my, like I said, overly analytical way of looking at things. Like you said, the okay. joke, I saw a homeless person, so I gave him one penny. I figured it's the least I can do. That's an overly analytical way of looking at what's the least someone can do. So it's sure. the smallest amount of currency.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, then I just tried stand up on a whim, and the first gig was great. So I figured I'm going to do this. This is going to be amazing. And then the second gig was terrible. And I was like, okay, I'm still going to do this, but now I know the realities.
Yeah. Okay. How did you apply your analytical, or how do you remember? It's a long time ago now. How do you remember your analytical approach and how you applied that to stand-up comedy?
I read a book that said that, I think it was Jay Sankey's Zen and the Art of Stand-Up Comedy. Mm-hmm. And I figured I just learned this from a book like I've learned anything. So it said that the punchline has to be believable and surprising. So I just look at everything like, how can I make the most surprising punchline possible while it is still believable?
Okay.
So it was sort of like limit testing. Like I have this, I saw these signs everywhere that said, clean up after yourself since your mother does not work here. I would see them in Finland. I would see them in Britain. They were like a thing in the 2000s.
I remember them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They were quite a popular sign. So I figured what's the best possible punchline for this. So I started the limit testing. Like what's the most surprising that you see it in space or whatever, but that's not funny because it's not believable. And then I figured what's the most believable that you just see it in some kid's room. And then you just get closer from both sides, like keep making it more, keep trying to keep it surprising while keeping it believable. And the one I ended up with that worked was, I saw a sign that that said, clean up after yourself since your mother doesn't work here, at an orphanage. And there was like a shred of truth to that because there's so many stories about these absolute worst orphanages in the world. And people could believe that someone might be that cruel. Someone who has an orphanage might be that cruel that they put up the sign. So that was sort of the most believable I could make it while still keeping it surprising.
I think it's really fun that for someone, an analytical person such as yourself, you decided to have a go at stand-up comedy. So you read a book about how to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And then started doing stand-up comedy. That's very methodical in the way that I think a lot of people might not think, they might not realize there are books about it. They might want to go in radically a different direction and go, hey, I'm full of self-belief and piss and wind, and I'm just going to go out and believe in myself. And I appreciate the methodical nature of your approach. That seems in keeping with what I know of you.
I have the same approach to sex. I've read like books like how do you do this particular sex act, and then there's all kinds of tips, and then there's testimonies and whatever, and I don't know why other people don't, since for some people it's like a mystery, like, oh, I did this, and like I would be hanging out with my friends, and one of them is like, oh, I did this, and it didn't, I don't think it made her happy, and I was like, did you miss page 36? But that's just my approach to most things. Like there must be a book, there must be a manual. I will learn this.
Yes, there's something quite satisfying about the idea of learning from books and the simplicity, I suppose, of recognizing that oneself is simply the latest human being and that all the human beings who've gone before have experienced very many of the same things, learnt to do it, and left information on how to do it. That seems like obvious when you put it like that.
Our need to reinvent the wheel is ego. We have to feel like, okay, I've reinvented. A lot of people who start stand-up, it takes them about a year to figure out that, okay, there are some people have done this before me, and yeah, I can actually learn from them. And a great part to learn, in stand-up, you learn a lot of things from mistakes. Since mistakes are more memorable, that's like an evolutionary thing, the negative things are more memorable. Like if you look at there's like a news item and then 10 different comments, the most negative one, you will remember that one, even if the nine are like positive ones. So mistakes are easier to remember. So stand-up comedians and engineers and whatever learn from their mistakes, but they don't have to be your mistakes. You can look at other comics, see what mistakes they make, and then learn from them for your own act. Like, we don't only have, like, we can stand on the shoulders of giants and losers.
Can you think of an early example of learning from someone else's mistake?
The two common topics. There, I don't know if you had, like, a TV shop, television shop, where after midnight they sell all these fake products, and it's always like... they bundle in a lot of things, like not only this, but then you also get this and da-da-da. So people who would stay up late would see. Is this a thing in the UK?
Oh, like a TV channel a shopping channel. Yes, gotcha. Understood. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So after like 1 a.m., they start selling those. So sure. Those are inherently funny since all the dubbing is so bad and everything. So a lot of comics would do jokes about that, and I would look at a night, and when the fourth comic does a joke about that, audience starts to revolt. By listening to podcasts, I've learned that in the US there have been Tinder revolts. Like when there's a US open mic with like 35 comics, everyone has 3 minutes. So when the 10th person goes on stage and says, "So who's on Tinder?" The audience actually revolts and starts shouting like, no, because it's so... So basically, look at what the others are doing.
I'm interested in the 8th and 9th comics that talked about Tinder and the vibe in the audience where they were on the verge of revolt, but the touch paper had not yet been lit.
The 8th and 9th were able to do it because Americans are so tolerant. I like your genuine reaction. That's one thing. And you can also learn about... sequencing the jokes. Like someone might have a joke that doesn't work because of what the previous joke worked. And I remember at a London comedy store, Gong Show, this person who was doing well did a joke about being unemployed. And then like a minute later, she did a joke about her current job.
Yeah.
And someone just shouted from the audience, "I thought you were unemployed." Mm-hmm. And that just sort of, it was a mistake. It wasn't my mistake. It was her mistake. But I stood on her shoulders and made a mental note and started seeing, like, that was an extreme example. You can't say you're unemployed and then say you're, that was an extreme example. But I would see factual inaccuracies in other people's, like, if you space the jokes out a bit more, if there's like 5 minutes in between, then the audience doesn't remember. And then you can have factual inconsistencies with your set, but you can't have them right. So those would be like two examples of, you can look at other people's mistakes. If you're really nice, you can tell them about them, but they don't always see it as you being really nice.
No, for sure. You should probably wait until you're asked. I want to come back to some of these early experiences, but I think before we do that, we should first establish where you are now and what you're up to now. Like what happened to you? I want to follow the thread of what you've been up to since we last saw each other. And before we then come back and get further into, I've got lots of questions about joke writing and early gigs and stuff.
Cool. But where are you now? I'll give the short version. Like I started 2004, 19 years ago. I did 1 year in Finland, 3 years in London, and now I've been back in Helsinki for 15 years.
Okay.
I am a national B celebrity.
Are like, you? I had yes. no idea.
Yes, I am a Finnish B celebrity. And a friend of mine, a lot of the comics here, stand-up comedy is popular here. So a lot of the comics are A celebrities. Mm-hmm. So one of them explained to me the difference between like an A celebrity and B celebrity. And A celebrity, like if a B celebrity goes into a bar and beats someone up, it's newsworthy. And if an A celebrity goes into a bar, it's newsworthy. So I'm okay. within a beatdown of an A celebrity. But yeah, got basically, okay. like a national. If I'm gigging around Finland, I'm usually the headliner, unless there's like an actual like a name. Then gotcha. I'm at. That's okay. where I'm at, like a circuit regular with yes. occasional TV stuff. And the biggest, I've written for a lot of news parodies over here.
Okay.
Which all of them are directly copied from you or the States. And okay. with some of them, we pay money, and with some of them, we don't. And that's the same thing all around the world. There's these same shows, whether it's like Egypt, Albania, Finland, Norway. The all the formats are copied, and sometimes they're like, okay, this was copied so much that we actually better buy it.
Yes, yes, I see what you mean. I remember growing up with Whose Line Is It Anyway? The yeah. improv show in the UK, and being staggered when I found out that it was literally a carbon copy of an American product.
Yes. Yeah. So basically where I'm at with my career, how would you say it? Like a working comic.
Yes. Excellent. And the only other Finnish comic, I think, that I've ever had on the podcast is Ismo.
Yes.
Who I imagine it's a small enough circuit that you know Ismo.
Yes, he's a huge star.
Yes. Is he a friend of yours? You can speak freely. If he's not a friend of yours, I'll cut it out.
You don't have to cut it out. I have a professional respect for him, but we're not exactly on each other's Christmas card lists.
Fair enough. Enough said. So
I respect his ability.
Yes, for sure. So how many comics would you say, and I don't know that I can answer this about the UK, I think in a conversation very recently, I think I estimated there at being something like 2,000 comics in the UK. I've kind of pulled that figure out of the air. You know, I think there are maybe 70 comics who are on TV all the time, and then there's got to be 1,500 to 2,000 who are on the circuit to various degrees. That may not be true, but assuming that's true, what's the equivalent in Finland?
Our population is 5 million, 5.5 million. So what's yours, like 70 or something?
You call it 70. I think it's 60, but that I haven't checked for
you
a while.
You should be
it's
more analytical.
That wouldn't suit me at all.
So basically, we have slightly less per capita. Working comics, we have 50 plus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hard to draw the line because most people have other products. Well, since the comics don't work during like Monday and Tuesday, so it mm-hmm. makes sense to have occasion to adverts or whatever or writing. I would say we have 50 plus working comics, mm-hmm. At least, like depending on the definition. Then several hundred like semi-professional people who have a actual day job.
Mm-hmm.
Not like a couple day job, but the actual day job. And then a never-ending sea of open mics.
Of course.
Some of them stay in the circuit and some of them leave. Okay. But yeah, I would say you say if you have like 2,000 people who can say that their occupation is a comedian, we have about 50. And I spoke to a producer. And she said that our biggest ticketing service, last year sold 500,000 tickets for stand-up.
Wow.
So every Finnish person sees 1/10 of a stand-up live show every year.
That's incredible. It sounds like Finland has an incredibly healthy, thriving kind of a circuit. Is it the sort of place that...
British or American comics should come to in order to enjoy what comedy was like over here in the 90s?
They should, and they do. There's at Apollo, one of our biggest venues, they have the comedy store night. So okay. There's this comedy store, London comedy store. You've heard of the place?
Yes.
Yes.
I thought you meant the Apollo Theater. I see now. Your dry joke. Yes, I have heard of the London.
You've heard of the London comedy store. Their acts go around the world playing local comedy stores. And we have like a monthly comedy store night, which is hosted by a Scottish comedian, Ray Zambino, who lives here.
Okay.
So they already come here, and then that's like the circuit regulars who come here. And then there's these big, huge acts who do our big culture arenas. And they already do. The biggest difference between the British comedy scene and the Finnish comedy scene, like the general vibe, is that we are a lot less cruel. There's a lot less bullying by the people who've made it towards the open mics. This was my experience in 2005, 2008, and also I've spoken to people on the British and American comedy scenes. There's a meritocracy, which makes a lot of sense, since you're, if you're funny, you get a decent position. But maybe they don't need to bully like the open mics quite as much as they do. So it felt sometimes a bit sick when I was over there. Like the behavior I experienced, I don't know how it was you when you started getting like 10 minutes or 5 minutes at the comedy store or something. I noticed a lot of bullying, like me, and then I heard from others. If someone did that over here, people would be like, are you all right? Like, is all everything right with you? Is everything right with you at home? Because that's how, you can't do that in other workplaces. Like if you're at an office workplace and you have like a new employee there, you teach them. You don't like bully them like in a schoolyard. Like you're both 15 years old. So that's a big, so I'm talking about 15 years, what it was 15 years ago. And another thing I noticed immediately when I went back home in Finland in 2008 was that something I hadn't noticed when I was in Britain was that the audiences in Britain were quite misogynist.
Okay.
Several times I saw female comics get absolutely horrific treatment from
audiences.
The audiences. Yeah. Like, show us your tits, love. I heard that several times. And then when I spoke to the female comics, they're like, oh, it's, they were sort of a, They of course they recognized the issue, and then they were like, oh, I just need to have comeback lines for that. And then I went back to Finland, and the audience didn't do that anymore. And when they didn't do that anymore, like one guy at one show shouted something, and then they just got thrown out for shouting like a slur about a female sex worker. So they just get thrown out, which should happen in a normal society. So those are the biggest, it just feels a lot less cruel because it's comedy and people should be having fun. So why should the British audiences abuse the female comedians, and why should the British circuit regulars abuse the promising open mics? So this is from 15 years ago. This was from before Me Too. I don't know how it's now.
Yes, it's really interesting because the stuff you describe, I recognize both of those tropes, and I hope, I was thinking as you were saying that, I hope that it is a bit like seeing a time capsule from 15 years ago.
For sure,
you know, we there are huge social justice problems in any industry, let alone one with the lack of regulation that comedy has. I was chatting to someone recently about the phenomenon of established act bullying newer acts. I mean, I wouldn't have used the word bullying at the time, and I don't know that I have seen bullying. I've heard about bullying. I don't feel that I was ever bullied myself, but things like in the dressing room, you know, the open mic takes one of the beers from the fridge, and one of the diehard older comics says, oh, those beers aren't for open mics, in a way that then that becomes, that information becomes kind of passed around the open mic circuit. And probably it was just a mean joke or a kind of a testing someone to see how they'd react, which is, of course, in itself bullying. I don't think we have that. Yeah, right. Well, this is it. I mean, I feel like we don't have that anymore, but I'm less involved in the circuit than I was at the time. I spend less time in green rooms these days. And I hope that that is consigned to the dustbin of history. I certainly can tell you, if you were to return to London, you would be surprised and impressed, I'm sure, with the proliferation of female comics and the proliferation of comics that are anything other than white men across all of those structures. There are still loads of white men, of course there are, but there is so much more opportunity and respect for people. And there are lots of, you know, gig booking posts on Facebook saying, we've got all the white men we need. I'm specifically looking for female identifying and non-binary acts for this show. So there's a lot of, like, there has been a...
We don't say that out loud.
Right, okay.
So it's
yeah,
okay.
I don't know if we're right to say it out loud, but I think we're still in a corrective period.
Like, I was booking a show with a friend of mine, and we're like, okay, the white male straight quota is done for this show. How do we book the others? Are we like, show us a picture of your skin color?
Sure.
Like, how do you say it? Like, when you're done with the...
People that I see, I only book one gig myself, and I don't need to make posts about it. But the posts that I see say it very outright. They say it very nakedly. We're completely filled with white men. We're particularly hoping to hear from female identifying and non-binary, or, you know, global majority people.
That's interesting, because we don't know how to say it out loud. It would sound insane, sort of.
Maybe you are
further ahead in this. Because,
maybe we had further to come from. I mean, I think we've had a stand-up comedy culture for longer than you have. And so maybe the bullying was developed and entrenched in the circuit in the 90s. I think the bullying that we've sort of described or touched on there is probably a reflection of the insecurity of people who've been going 20 years and who feel that their options and opportunities are diminishing due to an influx of, you know, wrongly feel that their opportunities are diminishing due to an influx of newer acts. That's probably what makes that happen. And perhaps in Finland, if there hasn't been a 30-year culture of stand-up comedy those kind of numbers.
We have the same frustrated feelings that I've been going so long, I should have more, but I just beat up the mirror.
Yeah.
So that's that it hurts. But it's less bad than bullying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really shocking to think about it. I'm sure across all industries and across all kind of periods of time, it's shocking to look back and see what was accepted as, you know, as standard practice.
People in the entertainment, the performing arts, are especially unprotected. And there's so few good worthy spots, and everyone is competing for them, so it breeds a ground for like abuse and bullying or something. And there's no HR, there's no corporate guy you can go to speak to, so you have to have common rules. But what I said about Finland, that there's less bullying, it's not just, it's the other Nordic countries as well, like the Swedish scene, the Norwegian scene, and the Danish scene that I've seen. Haven't been to Iceland yet, but it's the same thing. That's a bit of a, like a family. If you go to a family meeting and someone is being overly mean, then others are just like, are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this, are there, this is kind of reflected, I suppose. Do you have progressive prisons in Finland in the way that I associate with Scandinavian countries?
The sentences are quite short, which is something that some people complain about, that people, even if it's a tough crime, people get out fairly soon. And there is an emphasis on trying to return people to the society. So when your sentence is starting to end, they do these things, they give you liberties a bit by bit, and then you might get an apartment and you might get like a job or something. But they try to bring you get psychology counseling. It's more like helping than just straight up punishment.
Yes. And are you a progressive person in a progressive culture? Do you feel that your values and principles are more progressive or the same as the government's principles?
I'm extremely left-wing.
Yeah.
So I do shows like during elections. I do shows for the most left-wing party, the Left Alliance, Vasemmistoliitto. Okay. And I'm a member of them. So Finns are quite left-wing compared to especially the English.
Yeah.
We'd say the Scottish, not so much. So the Scottish are fairly left-wing, if you look at their policies. So we're quite close to them, I would guess. Actually, there's this theory that when Scotland finally gets rid of you guys, like finally gets their independence, the reason they didn't vote for it last time was they didn't want to leave the European Union. That was one of the arguments. So there's a bit of an irony, perhaps, there.
Sure.
But one day when they break out Braveheart style, there's this popular theory that they will become the unofficial sixth Nordic country and join our trade and organizations.
Oh, that's
whatever.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. They already do some like cooperation with us, but that's quite, and they're closer than Iceland.
Yeah, so, right. Okay.
So the distance is not a problem. But still, about your question, yes, I am extremely left wing. I was once a candidate for the municipal government, and it did not go well.
Oh, wow. Tell me about that. I've never had a candidate on the show before.
I was maybe a bit too left-wing. I did the machine where you write about, like, they'd give you statements and you say what you think. And I was alone in the corner. So since they have the conservative, a values liberal. So whenever it was values liberal, I'm like, I choose this. And then there's the money side, like how much services would you give? Would you have more progressive taxation? So basically, it's a fairly left-wing country, although not always. At this moment, we have a right-wing government, like one of the most right-wing governments we've ever had. But in a global sense, Finland is fine. And I'm on the extreme left.
Okay. Tell me, that is not a thing I hear. There is someone very close to me, a friend outside of comedy, who has been going harder and harder left and listens to Chapo Trap House podcast and that kind of media. And it's been like, I'm left wing and I sort of enjoy how kind of all in he's gone on being extremely left wing. But you very rarely, I can't think of many people who've said, on this show or in my life, I am extremely left wing. What are
they're
the
not
kind of
analytical enough?
Yeah. What are the markers for you of the extremeness of your left wingness?
The markers.
What are the kind of the milestones when you realize, well, I can't just be left wing anymore. I feel like this, therefore, I must be extremely left wing.
When I see left wing policies, and I think you could have gone further. Like, I wouldn't do things that differently. I would just take them further. If there's progressive taxation that the billionaires or millionaires should pay this kind of tax, I would increase it a bit. And when they try to close, like, the taxation loopholes, so it wouldn't be that easier for people to use that tax havens, which is something that the European Union is trying to do at the moment. So I would be like, make a harsher law. So it's just a matter of degree. It's not like I wake up with a picture of Karl Marx or something. It's just I would take the numbers further.
Okay.
That's not okay. We're fairly far, not to moderate your podcast, we're fairly far away from comedy.
Yeah, that's quite all right. I'm building for the listener a picture of you, and you must trust me, Tommy, to be able
to loop you back into
the subject in hand. You are one of the handful of people who in advance said, so can you send me the questions? And I'm delighted in telling you absolutely not.
Yeah, it's just traps. Yeah. But if I had the questions in advance, it would be like learning things from a book.
Well, so wouldn't it?
That's just how the brain works. Yeah.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this is Tommy. You can tell how much fun I'm having talking to him, and he's just such a joy to talk to. He's one of those people who everything he says is either obviously funny, or if it isn't funny, you've got to just play it back through your head again to see whether he's being dry and is really funny and you're an idiot. So a great joy to talk to him. Coming up in the second half, we're going to find out how comedy translates from Finnish to English. We'll talk about the Finnish corporate circuit, and we're going to talk about Tommy's podcast, Queer and Dumb, the mission of a straight person exploring the queer scene. And at the very end of this episode, there is a moment which I wanted to edit out where Tommy says something. Tommy harkens back to a positive memory he has about me. And I was feeling bashful about it. And I said, let's take it out. And then Susie, our logger, said, no, leave it in. It's good. So I am. And I'm just walking away from it. All right. I never normally like to include anything on the podcast whereby anyone says anything nice about me for some reason. That's just how my mind works. You can watch the full episode. You heard me watch the full episode on video at the Insiders Club. If you're a member of the Insiders Club, you can join for a minimum £3 a month. We have several different tiers. And I will name some of the people from those tiers later on, because if you're an insider producer, or dare I say it, an insider executive producer like Neil Peters, hi, boss. Then you get your name read out at the end now, not to mention getting to watch full episodes. So join the Insiders Club on Patreon. It's patreon.com/comcompod, or you can find links from stuartgoldsmith.com or indeed comedianscomedian.com. I'm giving you too many options there, but I am deduplicating. My friend Carl is helping me deduplicate my life and my web presence. And eventually I will just say one thing to you. It'll just be dot. It'll just be go to .com and receive a simple walkthrough of everything you can do with your life, and then it ends in you subscribing. Yes, that's what we want. So that's all coming up. And remember those extras, we're going to talk about Magic the Gathering to a small extent, because that is what Tommy used to play to a professional level. Has that whet your appetite? Yes, it's wet something. That doesn't mean anything. And again, I was going to delete that. I don't have time. My toilet seat has broken. And is it possible for the urine of a child to corrode over many years? Well, over a year. I think we've only had it a year. The metal bracket. Because I don't think I'm weeing on it. And I don't think any of the female members of the household are weeing on it. But the toilet seat has just snapped. And that is a thing. Like, I'm going away now. I'm not going to be back till tomorrow. And then I'm away for like 5 days. And having to, like, you can't not go out and get a replacement toilet seat. Doing that has really smashed my extraordinarily tight schedule for today. But at least I've spent that minute telling you about my toilet seat. Sorry, Tommy. God, I can imagine. Tommy's excited that this episode's going out because he gave me the pleasing information that this podcast is highly regarded in Finland. Hello to Finnish comics and Finnish listeners and those who are both. Hello to you all. I would love to come to Finland sometime. It looks awesome. And Tommy's been sending me some very funny photos of daily life in Finland. I will apologise to you one more time, Tommy, for talking about my toilet seat. But now I've done it again. So this apology is nothing but a vortex into, I mean, a toilet. Oh, Christ. Okay. Well, listen, let's get the hell back to this episode before I make things worse. Come and see me at the Macunthorpe Comedy Festival. I'm doing spoilers there. And I've got some other exciting stuff coming up that I'm desperate to talk to you about. A lot of it is me and producer Callum behind the scenes. He's co-producing kind of my entire life now. And we're simplifying, deduplicating and changing stuff. I now have a proper mailing list with stuff going on. I've got some news that I can't tell you, but I've read a really interesting book about writing a really interesting book, and that has completely turbocharged a project which has been just having a little a little hover, little, you know, work, a lot of work has been going on, but to very little tangible benefit. And now I'm feeling very excited about it. This really is post-amble stuff. Let's get back to the show. Here's Tommy. So talk to me a little more about your comedy and the shape that your comedy takes. What does a week look like gigging for you in Finland? Or a month? How many shows are there in your average month? And I realize you podcast as well, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Before the corona, I think I did about 100 to 150 shows per year. And wow. I did nothing else. Some of them were like open mics.
Okay.
So when I tell this to people that I do like 100 or 250 shows per year, and they're like, oh, that's a lot. It's 2 to 3 work days a week, which is less than 5, what the actual humans do. But still, yes. That's not all paid gigs. There's some of them are corporates and some of them are club gigs. And I do a lot of open mics. I'm always writing new material. And those are usually like the beginning of the week. And that's the mm-hmm. most fun I have. After the COVID, or like, I don't know if you're past that or whatever, but the numbers have not yet reached that.
Yes. Okay.
But that would be like my 2 to 3 gigs a week.
And how many, if any, of those are in English?
1/10, I would say.
Okay.
I would do like a English show once a month or something, but mostly in Finnish.
Okay. And how do you feel the...
Excuse me, can I tell a joke in Finnish?
Please.
Minun setäni elää unelmaa. Hän on koomassa.
Is that the end of the joke?
In a coma.
Lovely. Please, now I know what it is. Please, can I hear it again?
Minun setäni elää unelmaa. Hän on koomassa.
Thank you for the audio recording. Won't pick up the little yatta-tata that you did with your hands on the punchline. Tell me then how much of your stuff is translatable. How much of your existing Finnish material is translatable to English? Is there much wordplay, or are you just going for funny concepts that are then able to be translated?
Almost everything I write in English is somehow translatable to Finnish, but not the other way around. Since when I write in Finnish, I work with the culture. I work with Finnish culture, like I talk about Finnish politicians, Finnish TV shows, Finnish traditions. So that doesn't really translate. But the other way, when I write in English, I think about generic things. So not that much of the Finnish stuff translates, maybe a bit less than half.
But that's because of cultural reference points.
Yes.
Rather than funny
the
ideas.
Word.
I'm really interested in what ideas are funny. Like, you know, if you see a child excitedly run towards its parent and then fall over, and that's kind of a universally funny thing, provided you're confident the child isn't hurt. Do you know what I mean? There are like universally funny tropes.
A similarity between the Finnish and English sense of humor is that... both audiences like surreal stuff, like whimsy. And that's not always the case with the Americans. So I've noticed that the American comedians have fairly less whimsy or just... can I tell an anecdote about dying in front of Chris Rock?
Please.
Yeah. I was doing an open spot at the Comedy Store. And Chris Rock would come there because he's doing the O2 or whatever. So he wanted to train his thing. So he comes backstage and says hi to everyone and introduces. And it's a bit weird when Chris Rock comes to you, like shaking with the hand extended, like, hi, I'm Chris. I'm like, I am aware of this particular information. So told him, hi, I'm Tommy. So then he starts talking to the host. And this is my impersonation of Chris Rock. It's, if possible, even worse than your impersonation of a Finnish person.
Okay, go ahead.
So Chris Rock was like talking to the host. This is the Comedy Store. This is the Friday Late Show, right? It should be really easy, because in New York, the Friday late show is so easy, my mother could do a spot. Before the host gets to say anything, I interject, me like a three-year-old comic, I interject and say, has your mother done a spot? So I tried to be whimsy. I tried to be worse. I tried to like just, because it's what he said. He actually said, that's what my analytical mind heard, that his mother could do a spot. Extreme silence in the room, just extreme. The host facepalmed, like actual physical facepalm. That's when I realized this is not good. And then Chris had an entourage of about 30 people, 10 of whom were in the Comedy Store backstage. So it was completely filled. Just, it's not the biggest backstage. There were 10 of Chris's entourage, and everyone just staring at me, shaking their head. And Chris was looking at me. Chris stopped, looked at me straight in the eyes, and said with an extremely serious voice, like he's talking to a child, "No, my mother has not done a spot. What I meant was the Friday late show is so easy, she could do a spot." That was a long time ago. I'm not sure I've recovered still.
I was really hoping that your next response to Chris was to say, "But has she done a spot?"
No, there is a semblance of like self-preservation in there, yeah, somewhere. Managed to find.
I think sometimes you find yourself in such trouble that the only way out is to double down.
That might have been better than what I did. Was go home and cry myself to sleep.
Oh, Tommy, I'm sorry.
There's not a lot of comics who I think are better than him. So I met pretty much my biggest hero, managed to meet them, tried to tell a joke, and embarrass myself in front of everyone. So
how do you, this is a skip and a jump to a slightly different subject, but how do you cope when things go badly in comedy? You as an analytical person who understands himself, how do you cope with the emotional roller coaster of stand-up comedy?
I try to find the exact point of the flaw, so I can blame that flaw and get better. It's still it hurts. No matter how analytical you are, it hurts to do badly. I want people to have a good time. I want there to be some meaning. Like, they have come over here. They've spent money. They have traveled with their feet or their car. They're there to have, and the purpose of the event is for them to have a good time. So then when I do poorly, I have caused a failure in the system. It's like in a factory, one of the machines doesn't work. So that's bad. I feel bad for wasting their time, and I try feverishly to try to find the thing that went wrong, whether it's pacing, the joke, the gestures. I had this joke where I said, I tried to buy, I don't remember my own jokes, maybe. Anyway, I had a joke dealt with buying condoms. And it was the sort of like completely harmless joke that worked every time I told it. And then I was doing a corporate, and I told it, and it completely killed the mood, because the premise of the joke was that finally at the bar counter, I realized that I should buy a condom, since by then I realized I don't want to have kids. as if that's information I only came by at that exact moment.
Yeah.
I phrased it better back then when I remembered my own material. But anyway, it completely killed the show. So it was a corporate gig, and I couldn't get it working after that. And I was just wondering, what is there something wrong with the joke? And then I spoke to one of the people, and they said that their secretary had a miscarriage last week.
Ugh.
And she had always wanted a kid. And everyone, when she got like visibly pregnant, everyone was happy for her. And it was like a work group of 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely destroyed the mood by emphasizing how little of an interest I have in having a kid. Yeah. So I totally destroyed it. And after that, I was thinking, what can I do about that? Like, yeah. Should I, whenever I go into a corporate show, should I always ask in advance that, can I do my condom joke? Or
sure.
I still don't have an answer for that. But it was sort of an example of, you can always die for any reason.
Yes.
Because you can't know the thing. One thing that's...
Yes, you could do, yeah. You could do, my uncle is in a coma. Yeah, but he's living the dream, he's in a coma, and discover, yeah, that someone in the room has an uncle in a coma, or has, you know, or like the CEO has recently, his,
yes,
child is in a coma. You know, there, you can't legislate for absolutely any connection that anyone could make to your material.
Anyone, any joke can not only bomb, but totally destroy your set.
Yeah.
Which is... too much information. It's like someone, when a comedian learns that, it's like when someone learns that the universe is vast and cold. Maybe you were better off not knowing that. I'd say one difference between the Finnish and the British comedy scene, we have a lot of corporates. There's this huge tradition of all the pretty much every corporation have a Christmas party and a spring party and some whatever. So people get to do corporates all over the world, and they pay a lot compared to clubs, but they're not like British corporates where you get £10,000 or whatever, and then there's a TV celebrity.
Sure.
They're more like, if you're good in your third year of comedy, you can do corporates for like €700.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I figured that's not the case in like Britain, that like a promising, decent comedian gets to do 700, £600 gigs.
No, I think no one really knows what anyone else goes out for, but I think, yeah, you would not be trusted to do a four figure sum, you know, for a corporate if you didn't have a really convincing track record of success in a variety of circumstances.
That's not the case here, since the demand is so huge.
Yeah.
There's so many corporate... It's just like a tradition of either you go to their headquarters or they have bought a place in a restaurant or something, and they want some kind of entertainment.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So it's kind of like a halfway house kind of between the two states.
Yes.
Between the two different versions. Okay.
And if they only took the people with the massive TV hosting resume, they just wouldn't have enough comedians.
Yes. I think this is partly what I mean when I wonder whether people from the UK will be thinking, I've got to move to Finland. Because, you know what I mean? It's like, if I say that harkens back to the 90s, I think there's an understanding here that comedy used to be a lot easier as a career than it is now.
Because of a lack of Margaret Thatcher, we have not destroyed our middle class. So it's not just like people make little money with comedy or completely insane money, but there's a, yeah, vast middle class of comedians making fairly comfortable money.
And
that's what happens when you don't destroy your middle class.
What is it that comedy satisfies in you?
Two things. One is attention. Always wanted attention. Like, as far as I can remember, when I was a little kid and the adults were talking, I needed their attention. Just don't know what creates like a vast... My parents did give me attention. Like, so I don't know if it's psychology, but it's just so great to be listened to, be watched by a lot of people. That's, I get huge kicks, like huge dopamine kicks. And the other one is that the world is insane. And the only way I can make sense of it is with jokes. like with global warming, like the beginning of the 2000s, we could have done quite small things to avoid it, but the scientific community knew about it and the corporations knew about it, but they're like, if we do these extremely minor things, next quarter we'll make 5% less profit, so let's destroy our species. That's such an insane thing to do. And that they all did it. All the corporate people did it. And they managed to get scientists, think tanks. And then when the actual scientists tried to tell humans that maybe for 5% next quarter more profit, we shouldn't destroy our species, people are like, tree hugger. So that's so crazy. I can't wrap my head around it. But if I change it into a comedy form, then I'm in control and I can make fun of how surreal it is.
Yes.
This global warming is the only thing, but just general how we like treat each other, and we make so much food around the world and yet we still have famine, and we have so many houses around the world and we still have homeless. So that doesn't make any sense. So if I wasn't making jokes, if I was just looking at factual information of the world, I'd go crazy. So it's a defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism against the kind of bewildering cruelty and chaos of the world.
Yes. So that and getting attention, those are the two reasons. I cannot imagine myself doing anything other than comedy.
I suppose there is something existential and something, you know, dread laden, something doom laden about the chaos of the world. And the reaction, not simply to laugh at it, but to make other people laugh at it, to make jokes out of it. You said that was a means of taking control of it.
Yes. So we can together laugh at the absurdity.
And what is the reflection of that upon your kind of mental health? Do you feel like you have robust mental health? Are you a happy person?
Yes. There have been stages. Before I started comedy, I wasn't that happy. Like I lived, even though I was successful in Magic the Gathering, whatever, I lived until 24-year-old not being that happy. And then I started doing comedy. And it was so, so good. It still feels so good that I got happier. But the moment where I think I feel happy, and the moment I feel was about 5 years ago when I started enjoying the ride. Like, for example, I would always, nowadays when I'm on stage, I think about the joke that I'm in. I live in the joke. It used to be that I'm always thinking about the same joke. A lot of comedians say that they're always thinking about the next joke. My advice to them is to try thinking about the joke you're in. Like you might find that you do better and that you have more fun. I know it's not the thing you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be thinking about the next joke. What do I tell next for this audience? But live in the joke. And off stage, well, like when I was in open mic in 2007, going to Liverpool, the local Chuckle Hut or whatever, I would just be thinking like, how does this advance me? How do I have to do at this gig so I get the next gig? I would never be in the moment. So I don't think I was maybe the best company. I was listening to this podcast by Dana Gould, and he said that whenever he meets someone who knew him before he was 30, he just says sorry. And that hit me a bit too hard. I think I became an adult at like 35 or something. So, but anyway, I would just be the calm, frigid, analytical self, just thinking about how does this advance my business plan of moving along in comedy. But now what happens is when I go to those clubs, I talk to the open mics and we have a lot of fun. I just learn about their life. I'm like, so what do you do for a living? What is tell me about your family or something. And those trips are amazing. Just the car rides, they're so much fun. And I just wonder, why didn't I do this before? Well, before I was just like, oh, if I tell the joke number 7 a bit better, maybe in a month and a half, I will do better at the Comedy Store Gong Show or something like that.
Yeah.
So living in the moment, it might decrease my efficiency by 5%. But it brings happiness. So yeah, I was fairly unhappy until I started doing comedy. That brought me more happiness, but then self-actualization, like realizing that it's good to live in the moment when I was about 35 years old or something. That's, yes, I'm happy.
That's a really lovely answer. Thank you, Tommy. That's a really, I'm really fascinated by that. And it ties beautifully back into comedy as a thing, living in the moment of the joke. I can absolutely think of times when I was doing that, times when I forgot to do that, times when I realized I wasn't doing it and faked it. And I also think, you know, we've been going a similar amount of time. And I think that I too missed out on friendship opportunities and depth of kind of like, I feel like in comedy, I know lots of people, but the kind of,
you
the
were
depth
always
of my friendships
real
with
nice.
Some of them.
Sorry for interrupting. You were always real nice. I would never get the idea that you're one of those career hogs. Like you would never, no one ever felt like they were wasting your time.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. I'm very pleased to hear that.
And a lot of people, like when you're talking to them, there's this thing about like when you go to Edinburgh and then you're talking to someone, they're looking behind your shoulders all the time. Like, oh, is there a producer or something?
Sure, sure.
You never did that. Like you made no one feel worthless.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's important to me. That's a really wonderful thing to hear. Thank you.
That's just my analytical observation of your human behavior.
Let's finish up. I've enjoyed this so much. It's really lovely to see you.
I've had a lot of fun.
Look, we haven't talked about your podcast. Let's talk briefly about your podcast, which I enjoyed enormously. Although the branding of it is, it makes me laugh that you position yourself as dumb when we know that this is not the case at all. Tell us about your podcast.
Can I tell the origin story first?
By all means, yeah.
Okay, so I did a gig this summer at Pride, and there was this... queer feminist comedy night, and I asked to be there. And then the host is like, "Tommy, do you have something you want to tell me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, I'm straight, but can I be on the bill?" And then the host was like, "Okay, I'll put you on the bill," not really knowing what to expect. So I wrote a lot of jokes about the patriarchy and how ridiculous it is that since a child, this is one of the insane things. Since I was a kid, I've been told in school and whatever that men are smarter than women, and that's why CEOs are men and presidents are men and prime ministers are men. And all I could think of, if men actually are smarter than women, how does it show? Like, have you seen men? Not the brightest bunch. I'm sorry I'm doing material now. I shouldn't do material input. But anyway, that's the... I did that kind of jokes. And then I did jokes about how stupid homophobia is and whatever. And it went over gangbusters. It went over really well. So I figured, can this be done more? Like, I was the token straight in a queer bill. So I figured, can this be done outside of a comedy show? And Pride is huge in Finland. It's we had 100,000 people last time, and nothing in Helsinki gets 100,000 people, like absolutely nothing. So Pride is the single biggest event in Finland. But then the rest of the year, there's nothing. Like the queers go to their own podcasts, and then the straights go to their own. I figured, can this be combined? So I came up with this idea of like the queer scene for idiots, because there's these books like Something for Idiots and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I call it the person organizing the gig, Jamie McDonald, a trans man. So I figured, Jamie, let's do this podcast. It's called Queer and Dumb. I'll be dumb. You'll be queer. it's no problem for Jamie being queer. Like he'll do that one for free. And the idea is that I ask dumb questions, like the easiest LGBT questions about whatever is the topic, like whether it's pride or whatever. The title is a bit of a clickbait, but it means that I'm asking the dumb questions.
Yes.
And someone was asking me, like, Tommy, like, it's called Queer and Dumb, but you're not dumb. And I consoled them by saying that if you actually want to listen to a podcast where the host is dumb, you're spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
To start with Joe Rogan and just go from there, like, you will find these particular podcasts. So basically, that's the idea, to be like an idiot's guide to the queer scene, where I ask the simplest questions. And I had a lot of fun doing it. I'm not sure why there isn't another similar podcast. I tried to go through the LGBTQIA plus podcast, and I haven't found a similar
That's
concept.
Interesting. Yes, one of the really interesting things about it, because of the positioning of it, because it is like an idiot's guide to the queer scene or queer culture, and each episode, I've heard three of them, I think, each episode has a sort of a specific thrust to it where you say, I want to know about this and I want you to explain to me about this. And you have very interesting conversations, and Jamie's a very funny and personable
presence.
Jamie's
brilliant. Jamie's, yeah.
Really, really good. And he is, like, he's genuinely answering your questions. He's, you know what I mean? I felt like I learned something from it. I learned something about the
Jamie
origins
has,
of Pride.
Jamie has zero bullshit. Jamie will just answer the question completely honestly, and I will ask a whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's this combination that's either going to make good content or be like a mutual career suicide.
Yeah, it's, well, I really enjoyed it. I think people should listen to it. I found it funny and interesting.
Thank you.
I found it funny and interesting. But I think, I was going to say, I think maybe the reason why there aren't other podcasts like it that I'm aware of either is that it is a sort of it's a progressive mission of a non-queer person, of a straight person, to actually bother finding out and to invest time and energy in exploring another culture like that.
But
not another culture, that, you know, an adjacent and a completely intertwined kind of culture.
There is a thing called allyship. And it's with a lot of minorities, not just like the LGBTQIA plus minorities, but there's always been allyship. I haven't invented anything. It's just that for some reason, this particular podcast doesn't exist yet. So I just figured I'm going to make it exist.
The inventor of allyship. Tommy Volomy.
Stu, go fuck yourself. Hey, can I give a one shout out?
Yes, please.
To the level of the Finnish comedy scene and our extreme professionalism. Mm-hmm. Most of your guests I've seen, they've been at their house. I'm in an actual fancy studio, and my sound technician, Henri Lehto, has written for 4 full seasons of the Finnish version of Have I Got News For You.
Whoa, that's
4
great.
4 full seasons. Has your guest ever had a sound technician this knowledgeable about TV news parodies?
I don't believe so. And what is particularly thrilling for me, not to detract from his achievement at all, but what's particularly thrilling for me is that you as a guest are the first person ever to shout out their sound technician. And if that isn't allyship, I don't know what is.
I love you, Stu.
I love you, man. Thank you so much. Thank you. I would normally finish on Are You Happy, as you may know, and we've covered that. I'm just sort of wondering, because I don't know when I'll see you in person next. Do you have a particular memory of the scene in that time in London that you, not one involving, you know, me necessarily, but do you have a kind of a cherished, I almost wanted a bit more time of just kind of chewing the fat, and responsibilities, I'm sure you have limited time on your podcast studio, but just like, what is one of your, I'll come in again, What's one of your favorite memories of the UK comedy scene at that time? We've spoken about some of the negative aspects, some of the more kind of scammy promoters and what have you. But like, what do you look back upon fondly from that time?
It's not one specific memory. It's waking up every single day and knowing there's a gig somewhere where I can learn something by going to watch it. Either I'm performing on the bill or I'm not on the bill. The amount of talent is just so huge. And I'm not sure if people know that, because Americans are better at self-promotion. So they're better at filling the YouTube. They're never better at billing the Netflixes. But I think you guys should, when I see like a Netflix compilation thing where there's five comedians, I would like, if these people were British, this would be a higher quality. So I genuinely think your comedy scene is, even though it's extremely well known, it's widely underrated. I would recommend people go to London, look at the shows. They're really, really good. Not the open mics. The open mics can be horrible. But like an actual paid show, they're really, really good. So that's like a generic memory. I have one memory about you that really stuck to my mind.
Oh, God.
So you were hosting. You were hosting a show, and you had just started to get like the hosting of like a paid show. It was one of your first of those gigs. And then you do your bit at the beginning, and then the opening act, who does like 20 minutes, was a bit of a circuit regular. I was like an open mic in the middle or whatever. So the opening act, a professional comedian, and he a person of color. And he would go on stage, and he's black. And he would do jokes about how Muslim women have the burqa because they're so ugly. He had an entire bit. Yeah. He had an entire bit about that. And then you went on after him, and it's one of your first like professional hosting, and you immediately told the audience, like a public announcement, like that joke that the comedian did was not okay. You cannot say that that's a racist thing. That's nonsense. I apologize, and the following acts will not be this racist. So I just figured that's brave. I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have had the courage to do that. So do you have like a career death wish, or are you the ally? Do you remember this incident?
I remember the act. I don't remember the joke, but I remember it being about that. And I don't remember the incident, but I am very pleased to hear it. I suspect I do remember rather more well than that an earlier incident where something like that had happened and I hadn't said anything. And I think I had decided that I'm not going to let that happen again. So you saw the second half of the movie of that moment, because there is someone out there who saw me compare a gig where someone said something like that, may have been the same person, and I was flustered and didn't know how to cope with it, and through to commercial, as they say, you know, I kind of like, you know, brought another act on or what have you. So there'll be someone out there with the opposite, not the opposite of that story, but I'm thrilled that you saw that.
So God, what I learned was a couple of things. Jesus. What I learned was a couple of things, that as a white person, you can call out a person of color for being racist. I just didn't know that that's a thing that exists. And then after that, I learned that you can be career-minded and have dignity. That you don't have to choose. You don't have to just say, be silent or whatever. So that stuck to mind as a memory. I've thought about that particular moment a lot.
Tell me, if that anecdote was about someone else, I could leave it in. I mean, I can't round off this episode with you telling a story about me being something like an extremely, you know, that's like a really, that's a nice story about a nice thing I did. Who would I be if I finished the podcast with that?
It was a big moment for me, since I learned. It's like I read books. So that was like seeing something happen. So a singular anecdote. You're asking me like a really nice anecdote that I had in the London comedy scene. And the thing that I enjoyed most was doing a gig in London and doing well. And I had so many of the good shows that I don't remember a singular one. So I did so well. The jokes were so good that I cannot pick a single. I had a lot of fun in London. I just remember the bad shows because there were so few of them.
Beautiful. Thank
if,
you,
if
Tommy.
If I had done less brilliant shows, both in brilliance and the amount of the shows in London, I could name one. But there were so many, and they were so good that I can't. That's possible.
Thanks, Tommy.
So that was Tommy. What a joy. What a joy. And thank you. Can I thank Tommy and his brilliant studio tech, who is also a famous comedian in Finland. Thank you so much for making the effort to like hire a studio and have proper gear at your end. Whenever I have to do video episodes with people where they are remote or on Zoom or what have you, few people go to that effort. I don't know if I mentioned at the time that when I interviewed wonderful Mike Birbiglia, I'd sort of thought to myself, well, he's got a podcast studio, maybe he could sit in it. But he sat round the corner from it and recorded on his laptop. So there's that. Important Tommy news before we wrap this episode up. Tommy says that he timed this. This is classic Tommy. He's probably read a book about this. He timed it so that when this podcast goes out, he has two episodes. He and Jamie have got two episodes with a British guest as the latest ones. Travis Glossop, a radio and podcast producer, has been in Finland for a year due to his relationship with a Finnish woman. And episode 12 is him talking about Britain and his youth. Episode 13, launching Thursday, is a mini episode, again with Travis, where the three of us discuss non-sexual art that makes us horny. This is what you can expect from the Queer and Dumb podcast. We recorded an episode and a mini episode in a row since Jamie is on a vacation now. Efficient use of studio time. Classic Tommy. But he says, but yeah, the first thing that people see when checking out our pod from yours is me talking about feeling a strange sensation as a kid whenever MacGyver or Knight Rider would get tied up. That, to me, is a recipe for a tremendous amount to enjoy. So do check out the Queer and Dumb podcast. I've listened to a few of them. They're really, really good fun, and you genuinely learn stuff as well. I will do a post amble at you in just a second. Please find Tommy via the Queer and Dumb podcast. He is on Twitter and TikTok and all those things, and we'll chuck them in the show notes, but I don't have them at my fingertips. What will he do? Thank you, producer Callum. And remember, you can see my award-winning climate show, Spoilers, at the Leicester Comedy Festival on the 22nd of February at 7 p.m. Links in the show notes. That one is nearly sold out. It is also at the McCunsleth Comedy Festival, so go to maccomedyfest.something or other and find out that. That has a few tickets still available due to being in a large room. A reminder for you that the Insiders Club is moving to Patreon, where you can get full video episodes, extra content now in video as well as audio, including over 16 minutes with Tommy. over 16 minutes. Let's just say roughly 16 minutes. I feel like we're upselling 16 minutes with over 16.2 minutes with Tommy. With under 17 minutes is another way of saying that. We have exclusive guest announcements and engagement. Engagement? Exclusive guest announcements and engagement. Oh, that's because we've opened community chats, which has been Chris and Stu's secret OnlyFans. So if you want access to Stu's secret OnlyFans, you've got to join the Patreon. Plus, we have a monthly Stu&A, which is a Q&A with me. With a fun title. You also get access to the full back catalogue of extras with the new RSS feed. Go to patreon.com/comcompod for more info. Thank you so much to our insider producers. These are people who have gone in at a particular tier on the Patreon. They are Sam Allen, Jay Lucas, Gary McClellan, Dave. That sounded like a double-barreled name. That's two people. Miles Walsh, Nick Waite, Andras Purdy. He's Estonian, so it's probably Purd. Caroline Schmidt, Jonathan Stewart, Richard Lucas, Paul Swaddle, James Burry, Ashley Stewart, and Mike Sheldon. And as you can hear, that's an absolute sausage fest. So please, female and female identifying and potentially non-binary listeners to the show, also, would you please step up and join the Patreon, okay? Because I'm going to be awkward reading out those, I'm going to say it, pretty white male names. But a big thank you to our special and very fancy insider executive producer, Neil Peters. And if you'd like to join that gang, you've got to join it. I think it's £19.99 a month. So if you want to be one of the real swanky guys like Neil and get a big thank you, which I promise from now on will sound less sarcastic, then hop over to the Patreon and do that. That's everything. So I've been Stuart Goldsmith. The show was produced by producer Callum. That was Tommy Volumes. The show was logged by Susie Lewis. And I will post Amble at you in just a second. But and if you're new to the show, that's where I chat to you for a bit afterwards. But that's basically the show finished. And now there's a bit on the end. Welcome to the bit on the end. I've got a couple of things to talk about. Let's start with the sadder thing, which is that Moz passed away. And thank you so much to those of you who got in touch regarding Moz and were kind enough to tweet "What a pair of bollocks," though, at me, and not just tweet across many social medias. I don't know what you do. I don't know what the protocol is to honour someone who is a member of the sort of fan community and worked on the show. There's loads of logs in a big archive of this show, and several of them bear Moz's name. And I don't know what the official thing is that I say now, so I shall just wing this. You were a good dude, Moz, and I think you... It's not my place to do a big thing like this, but listen, I really enjoyed all of the encounters I had with Moz, and I remember him fondly, and for those of you can I say fandom? I think it would make him laugh that I'm struggling through this. There was something about the whole of that final show that we did for him. There was something about that which felt, I spoke a little bit about this last time, it felt peaceful and wonderful and joyful and not sad. It didn't feel sad at all. And it has slightly reconfigured the way I think about death, I think. That has probably got bigger ramifications that I can get into for now. On the subject of, again, is this an appropriate link? I don't know. Di Henwood is coming up on the show. Fabulous, just irrepressible Kiwi who just wants to have a good time. Di Henwood, he's very famous in New Zealand, if you are listening from there, and very lovely. I've got a particular fun memory of walking to get chips with Di after a gig at the Christchurch World Buskers. And he is just absolutely radiating peace at the moment because he has stage 4 bowel cancer and is going to come onto the show and talk to us about his comedy career. And I imagine we will also get into how he manages to be so, from what I understand, from my correspondence and other stuff I've seen from him recently, how he manages to just remain kind of peaceful and hopeful and optimistic and really wonderful. So those things are going through my mind at the moment. I feel like it's one of those, you know, every so often lots of people seem to either get ill or get very ill or pass away within a short period of time. You're like, geez, this is happening all over the place at the moment. And I think that the experience I've had with Moz in particular has made me feel very kind of calm about it. I mean, not calm in how I stumble through a thing on a podcast not knowing what the proper way to talk about this is, what's the most respectful way. You know, one of my great things is like, oh God, I just never want to upset anyone or say the wrong thing. And I think when it comes to death, it's one of those things that usually closes me down and makes me stumble and go, is it okay to be respectful? Do you know what I mean? I just turn into a jelly. But there we go. Anyway, sayonara, Moz. And what a pair of bollocks though, eh? Great lad. Now, other stuff. We have other stuff to talk about as well. I'm very excited about having the Patreon all in one place is a joy. Having had, like, just administratively to kind of prune away branches of what I now realise, now that I'm working on the show with producer Callum, is like, the show had become over many years me trying to do 20 jobs and delegate little bits of them and trying to the whole back end of like using MailChimp and WordPress and PayPal and trying to sellotape together this whole thing. The simplification of it is fabulous, and I just hope that I manage to use that to take a deep breath every so often and enjoy the space rather than using that to go, great, that's done, now I can fill my time more. But guess which one I'm doing? I've had some really fun experiences recently. I'm going to talk to the Patreon about some of those. I did a gig at the Houses of Parliament, which is deeply eye-opening and weird. If you would like to join the Insiders Club, you get the chance to submit your questions for a monthly Zoom Q&A. What a fun title they wrote. So you can ask me about that if you like. But one of the other things I will say, and this is, I hope this doesn't sound too kind of artful to be talking about this. Where is the thing? I've got a list of things to mention in stuff. Hello, where is it? It's
there. Susie, the logger, says, I'm going to read some of this verbatim. Susie says, you know I've been logging... What's the sense of that? You know... No, you know. You know! I should have read this first. I should have reread it first. Susie says she's been logging Martin Urbano's audio through this auto-transcription program that we used this afternoon, and curiosity made me look at one of the videos of you both, because she obviously works in audio, to see who he is, because she didn't know of him before. And she's gone from listening with interest, she says, to watching this very same section with a massive grin on my face and chuckling at your interactions. As you know, I love the podcast, but there is even more joy in watching it. It's a total delight. So much is lost by not seeing your facial expressions. It's almost a different experience. So delighted you're filming these now. I think I'd read that out anyway, even if there wasn't a genuine financial benefit to me of convincing more of you to using it to convince more of you to support the show on Patreon so that you can watch it. But that literally never occurred to me. This is the real reason I want to read it out, is I was completely floored by that, because my experience of watching video episodes of me interviewing someone is that I can't look away from my own stupid smug face nodding and sort of, do you know what I mean? I've just been incredibly self-conscious about what my face is doing. And I thought that, you know, I mean, obviously there are moments where we cut from them to mine to both, to what have you. I would be so happy if it was a video episode of just the guest. And I was just a shadowy figure in the darkness in the background. But apparently it's good. So there we go. Let me know your thoughts on that. The ComCom Facebook group is still up and running, and there's been some very fun stuff in there. Let's just briefly tell you what's been going on in there recently. I've been enjoying this. Paul Savage made a very funny post that was non-Stew approved, showing off about how much he... It was a little kind of jokey meme about... the fact that posts, like advertising posts, self-promotional posts, have to be Stew approved to be in the Facebook group for ComCom, which remains one of the nicest corners of the internet, if I do say so myself. And then I cut it out, put a big red cross over it and reposted it. And then Adam Larter, I see, has just posted a Paul Savage approved post about the original meme. So that's fun. There's some book posts in there, which I won't tell you about unless you join, but those have been great. I've been asking people about what you use the podcast for and what have you actually learned from it? Like, what's a tangible thing that you now do differently, a result of something you heard on the podcast? I would love to hear more of those. I've hashtagged them book post. So if you're in the Facebook group, you can encounter those. There is also some really interesting stuff in there. There's applications for volunteers at the Secret Welsh Comedy Festival, a sarcastic post about street performers by way of a cartoon, some people asking about Melbourne, an argument about a very famous comic using some material we may have heard before. It's not an argument, but it's something I won't, you know, let's keep it to the Facebook group. Some other things. So basically, join there and you can be part of that slightly more extended community if you are unable to support the show financially. So that's nice as well. That'll do me for now. That'll do for now. I hope that wasn't too big of a gear change from talking about Dear Moz to talking about the fucking Patreon. Any squirming I might do as a result of it, I just think he'd enjoy. Bye-bye. Oh, and try and maintain a consistent sense of self, will you, for once? Oh, and one more thing. Have you read the War of Art by Stephen Pressfield? Brilliant quote from it. I've been thinking about this for 48 hours now. You are not the problem. The problem is the problem. I read that and I sat in a cafe and said it out loud to myself 5 times with a dazed expression on my face. You are not the problem. The problem is the problem. And then I said it to my wife and she said, what do you mean? And I was like, oh, I thought it was really obvious. So I'll just talk you through it for 20 seconds. When my situation is something that my experience is that when something is going wrong, like I'm running out of time because the toilet seat broke and I'm thinking, fuck, I've got to meet someone in 22 minutes. It's going to take 20 minutes to get there and I haven't packed for London yet. My feeling is like, oh God, that's me. I'm a problem. I fucked up again. I'm a piece of shit. Oh shit. But I'm not. I'm not the problem. The problem is the problem. There's a lateness issue because lots of stuff happened because the toilet seat was the problem. I'm not the problem. So I don't have to feel bad about it. I just have to hurry up and finish this now. Okay? Toodles.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.